Welcome to the Flo Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:45 in that specific summer time, and today is Friday, June 3rd, and of course, it being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. And today was a big day, and it's a big day right across asset classes, and it's and the events that transpired could have potentially medium-term significance. So we really should probably kick off and talk about those first. And it is all tied to the fact that the U.S. companies are hired less people last month. Only 38,000, and it's been well in excess of 100,000 and even over 200,000 for much of the last year, which has obviously helped to bring down the unemployment rate. But the unemployment rate is also falling for another important reason, and that is that the labor force participation rate is declining. Now, you could say, okay, fine, the reason it's declining is because people are retiring. And obviously, if the baby boomers are retiring, then that takes some of those people out of the labor force. But they're not being replaced, even though the millennial generation is larger than the baby boomers. They are underemployed, and a lot of people are still staying in school, or they're remaining outside the labor force. And something that Mrs. Tracy and I have been sort of noticing is that when you look at the size of disability parking spaces all over the city, and you see people getting out of their cars with disability stickers, they don't look particularly disabled. But what there is a steady trend of is people deciding that they're going to take disability benefits and come out of the workforce. And it's about 8 million or 8.8 million people so far. And of course, that wasn't all in one day, but it is a trend that is increasing. Then, when you look at all of those factors, is it that difficult to question why there is such voter disaffection? But what we've had is that because this number was so much lower than was expected, that the dollar has pulled back emphatically now from the region of the 200-day moving average. It was oversold. It had rallied very, very powerfully and closed the overextension relative to the trend mean. And today's reaction is really a smackdown for bulls of the dollar. And it has a pullback in with a. And it, if you look at the weekly chart, it is a downside weekly key reversal. And follow through next week would confirm the signal, but the size of the dynamic on its own, something that anyone who is describing the chart to a blind person would have to look at this today and say, wow, something really big happened here. So it is a bit of an all change moment for not just the currency market, but the precious metals, for the bond markets. And while we have had some volatility in the equity markets, probably the full repercussions aren't going to be seen until next week, because there was, for example, Asia was already closed, and Europe will need time to digest what exactly is going on. Now, when we look at what is happening with the dollar here, that it had pulled back really very sharply in the first part of the year. Then it had staged this very impressive rally, and now it's encountering resistance in the region of the moving average. So it is looking increasingly likely we're going to see some additional dollar weakness. And then when you contrast that performance with what's been happening in the precious metal markets, where gold prices have staged a very impressive rally from the beginning of the year, and have been engaged in what has been a process of mean reversion over the last 6 weeks. Well, gold prices were up today about $33, and that's a clear upper dynamic from the region of the trend mean and the psychological $1,200 level, and a clear downward dynamic now would be required to really question that this is not just near-term support, but potentially medium-term support for prices. It's a very similar story for silver, and silver had a bigger pullback, and it was up 39 cents, and obviously that's a larger percentage gain because of the just where the pricing is. But silver pulled back by $2 full, and today it rallied almost 40 cents. So that's a really impressive upward dynamic, and finishing out the day pretty close to the upper side of the range on the day. Now, palladium also rallied nearly $20, but it wasn't able to hold the majority of that advance. Although the high of the day was a spike high once the news was released, and then it held on to the majority of the advance in here today. Well, this is an event when you have the dollar pulling back so violently. It is because there is a continued speculation as to just can the Fed reasonably raise rates when there is that kind of uncertainty in the hiring environment from corporations, that if corporates are no longer hiring people at such an impressive rate, then can we reasonably raise rates? Then they're probably going to demur. They're going more likely to say, "Okay, we'll have to wait and see for further evidence." And this debate has been ebbing and flowing for the last 6 months. And when you look at that 12-month yield, it had got right up to the upper side of what has been a 6-month range, and today it pulled back in a dynamic fashion, suggesting that it is likely now to go right back down and test the region of the moving average and the progression of higher reaction lows, because it isn't all in the bag just yet, and it would be rash to try and anticipate just what the Fed is likely to do based on one data point, because wage growth is likely to be a much more important factor, and we won't have figures for that for another while. Now, that would suggest that rather than being an outright reversal, it is a reversal of what had been an impressive short-term move in yields. But when you look at the 10-year yield, then it pulled back pretty emphatically. The long bond today was, the future, was stronger by 2 full points, the 10-year by a full point, and the 10-year yield has pulled back to test the lower side of its range. So it encountered resistance in the region of the moving average, it's pulled back to the lower side of the range, and you really would have to give the benefit of the doubt to the most recent dynamic, which was today. So a countermanding upward dynamic is now required to question potential for additional yield contraction. And I posted an article today, it's a dramatic headline saying that it was the banking sector was hit so very hard. But what we saw on Wall Street was the majority of indices finished well off their lows. In fact, the S&P 500 was only down 6, which is just over a quarter of a percent down on the day. The Dow was only down 22, which is just over a tenth of a percent down on the day. So then you have to question, why is it that stocks have held up so well when you have bad news? And of course, it's because the liquidity on which the medium-term bull market has been predicated is unlikely to be withdrawn if hiring is so negative so weak. So then we're at a point where the stock market has been ranging for a year and a half, and a range, and it is a well-defined range, is an explosion waiting to happen. Then what do we know about a range that is an explosion waiting to happen? It's that if you wanted to buy the market, that if you wanted to buy the market below 1800, you haven't had much luck, and you would have had to lift your bids up into the range, and you would have been offered two opportunities in the last 9 months to pick up shares at attractive levels. If you wanted to sell, then you would have had ample opportunity to sell in the 2100 area, and prices right now are at 2097. So then this is an area where if somebody wanted to sell in the region of the all-time high, they have ample opportunity in which to do so. and they have had ample opportunity for a year and a half, because this is not the first time prices have been at this level. So what you start to get is a thinning out of demand below the market and supply above the market. And that is the foundation on which any breakout in any market is predicated. Now, this market has been ranging for a year and a half. So if we do get a breakout and that breakout is sustained, then we can conclude that anyone who wanted to sell in the 2100 to 2140 area has done so, and that there is a surfeit of people who want to buy, and that would push prices up until they find people who want to sell. And that's how you get a big breakout. But considering that the majority of analysts have been quite bearish, and in full honesty, I haven't taken a long position in stocks. I was shorting the last time we were up at this level, but I'm not shorting right now because I'm a little bit more cautious, because if we are not going to see an unwinding of liquidity. And I think it is worth considering that the stock market went sideways when the Fed began to withdraw liquidity from the market. And if they have stopped withdrawing liquidity, then there is the potential for stocks to go higher from here. And not least because lower government bond yields and continued access to very low interest rates mean that the ability of companies to source debt in order to fund buybacks and share buybacks, dividend increases, and refinancing of old debt, and indeed issuing new debt, is unlikely to become much of a problem. And I've talked in a number of previous audios about the impending large number of bonds that need to be refinanced. But in the event that interest rates do not go up, then that's unlikely to be a problem. That companies will have ample opportunity to refinance, and then they even have the potential that they might even be able to refinance at attractive rates. And if that's the case, then that would remove a headwind from the stock market. So then there is the potential that stocks do move higher from here, and despite the fact that leverage is at an all-time high, that asset prices are no longer cheap and are on the more pricey side of fair value, although they are not at bubble levels, then when we look at corporate profits that have been declining and a global economy that has been spotty, to say the least, and I think that's a very conservative statement, then what is it that could drive the stock market higher? And it's quite simple, that if this has been a liquidity-fueled rally, then we have to consider that it will be taken to its logical conclusion, which would be that asset prices will go up, and they will go through fair value, they'll go through pricey, and they'll go into a bubble. And in fact, that has been the potential outcome from day one of quantitative easing, because central banks, having embarked upon such an aggressive course of action, well then, it's very hard for them to unwind it, and not least because investors and traders have become in large part addicted to the liquidity, and to take it away suggests that they would suffer withdrawal, and then that withdrawal would have a deleterious effect on the economy, which is the exact opposite of the outcome the central bank wants to achieve. So then they are inhibited in how much of the liquidity that they can remove from the market, which is why central bank balance sheets have been absolutely stayed. When they've stopped their quantitative easing programs, they generally don't shrink the size of their balance sheets. Well, if that's the case, then bonds, yes, they are expensive, and it does represent a bubble. The prices that bonds are at right now are absolutely eye-watering. where you have the long bond at 166, even though it matures at par. And yields are at highly unattractive levels from the perspective of a yield to maturity basis. There are $7.8 trillion in bonds globally that are trading at negative yields, which is about 40% of the total inventory of bonds globally. Now, if the USA does not raise interest rates anytime soon and yields there continue to compress, well then who's to say that this is the limit of the number of bonds that will be trading at negative yields? Perhaps it will even get lower, or that yields will go lower and the percentage of bonds in that condition will increase. Well, then if you're looking for a safe haven, then what can you do? Well, there are really three potential outcomes. If interest rates are negative, then you have to buy stocks, because the potential for dividends to increase is vastly outweighs the ability of government bonds to give you a positive return. So that's one. Well, you could obviously buy property, because if interest rates are very low, then the cost of borrowing is very low, and the potential for asset price inflation is perhaps the base case. So then property prices, which are no longer cheap, could potentially move into another bubble. Or you could buy gold, because gold doesn't pay a dividend, and all of those people that the only way that they can generate a value for anything on it is using a dividend discount model, have never really liked gold because it doesn't pay any yield. But considering that 40% of the bonds in the world pay negative yields, then gold has very clear positive attractions from an insurance perspective. If you want to insure against the worst possible scenario, whether inflation, deflation, or helicopter money, then gold really is an attractive asset class, and not least because it peaked in 2011 and trended lower for, really until January of this year. So the rebound is really still in its early days. $1,200, and considering that where prices were yesterday at least, and considering that the low is only around 1,050. So we're really not that far off the low, and for silver prices, they're considerably further away from the bubbly peak that they reached in 2011. So it's certainly the case that gold prices are not expensive relative to their peaks. Then they're not expensive either relative to the relative cost of production. So the potential for for gold's luster to be reassessed by investors in a positive light, I think it has to be just the base case right now. And silver and gold miners are offering leverage to gold. And again, that is something that they haven't been able to do for much of the last decade. And the reason this time is because they're not spending a great deal of money on expanding their production capacity. In the early 2000s, the gold mining sector had gone through decades where they had no money to invest in additional new supplies. So when they had money, they embarked on a massive expansion plan, because it was their what they would have considered as a once in a lifetime opportunity to really ensure the sustainability of their businesses. But of course, it meant that they had absolutely no free cash flow. And one of the reasons previously that people had bought the gold miners instead of the gold price was because they paid a dividend. But until quite recently, they did not pay dividends because they didn't have any money, because they were spending it all. So when gold prices started to come down, then they had to cut back on their expansion plans. And now they are no longer expanding. So their profitability is improving as gold prices rise. Cash flows are beginning to flow, and those that do pay dividends will have the ability to increase those dividends. So then they do offer leverage to the gold price, and not least because they fell in an accelerated manner for basically 5 years, and now this is a really impressive reversionary rally and a short covering rally and a rush by people to get in. So the Gold Bugs Index has doubled since the beginning of the year and found support today in the region of 200 and bounced emphatically. So it wasn't quite a full mean reversion, and today it really was a very impressive upward move to confirm support in the region of that psychological 200 level. Well, then we have to start to think about what is it that we could be presented with over the medium to long term. Well, gold prices are continuing to rally, and oil prices continue to hover here around the $50 area, and they were down a tiny bit in here today, having been above 50 on Brent for part of the day. And it's natural that prices would at least consolidate in the region of $50. But when you start looking at the broad commodity sector, then a number of the industrial metals are beginning to show some form. The precious metals have found support, broke out, consolidated, and have now found support in the region of their trend means. A number of the soft commodities, which admittedly have been assisted by El Nino, are breaking out to new recovery highs. And the continuous commodity index, which is often called the old CRB because it's unweighted, continues to march higher in what continues to look like a recovery trajectory. And generally speaking, you get that kind of move in the latter stages of a major bull market. But we're still only in the foothills of that. So then when we look at stock markets, then the outperformance of the commodity sector, both precious metal and energy, has been very impressive this year. The relatively torrid environment that we've had for the rest of the stock market may give way to an additional liquidity fueled rally, and it might even end in acceleration if the Fed is forced to reverse course and engage in quantitative easing once more. But then, you know, we have been rallying for 7 years already, so we've gone through in terms of the psychological perception stages, we've gone through the first two at least. So we've gone through the first one, which is doubt or ignorance, but in this case definitely doubt, that people doubted that prices would ever get back up to their peaks. And they would have given you a list as long as your arm in early 2009 and late 2008 for why prices were never going to get back up to their peaks. Then you get acceptance, and there was plenty of acceptance between 2012 and 2015, where people really understood that this was a liquidity-fueled rally, and that you just stayed long as the Fed was printing, and the Fed printed pretty consistently for nearly 3 years. So then that really did help the market to go higher. And now, because the Fed has stopped printing and is in fact beginning very, very slowly to withdraw some of that liquidity, well, then we have to ask the question, what is the situation for this liquidity-fueled rally? I think lots of people are asking that, and that is why this market has gone pretty much nowhere for the last year and a half. So if it can break upwards, it's likely to be a liquidity-fueled reason rather than anything else. And we are at a very interesting point, because we're either one downward dynamic from confirming resistance in this area, in which case we would likely go through the 2050 area and back down towards the 1800 area, or we're one upward dynamic away from a big breakout of a well-defined trading range. So it's a very important time to be looking at markets, because if we do break out, then We've been through acceptance already, and then the potential for people to just really throw in the towel and say, okay, if we're going to have this negative interest rate environment, I've got to get a return somewhere, so I have to own stocks. There's no longer a choice. Then that's the kind of thing where people start to lose the run of themselves. That rationality, which wasn't making them any money, gives way to irrationality, which does. And then prices accelerate higher. But we would be the first to point out that if, in fact, that does occur, obviously the acceleration is the time when you make money fastest, but it is also a time when the greatest pressure is on you to lose the run of yourself, and especially when people have been so in control of the run of themselves during what has been a difficult year and a half. And then they would really have to just identify that we are in the third psychological perception stage, which is the mania, and that it's good to participate, but it's also good to get out. And you would only participate if you go in with your eyes wide open, that you don't go in without having an exit strategy for when things do go pear-faced, because they will go. When you get a big move like that on the upside, an acceleration of a well-defined trend, then you do at least get mean reversion, and the faster the acceleration, the greater the potential is that you get a big pullback. Now, that's looking perhaps a little bit too far forward, and certainly the weakness of the dollar and the pullback in the dollar is a benefit for the US, and not least for those big corporate autonomies which are consolidating earnings back into dollars. So if the dollar continues to weaken, then that could potentially offer a catalyst or a bullish catalyst for the for Wall Street. But if the dollar is going down, then the euro, which was really quite strong in here today, and the yen in particular are going to be strong, and that's likely to act as a headwind for their respective markets. So the majority of indices today were down over 1%, and the the Spanish index was down over 2%. And I'm looking at the Nikkei futures right now, and they're considering that it was relatively unchanged in here today on the futures. They're down 2.25%. And the Hong Kong market is relatively unchanged. And in fact, the fact is that because Hong Kong has got a peg to the US dollar, then if the US dollar is going to weaken, that should, generally speaking, be reasonably positive for Hong Kong shares, and might offer some respite for the property market, which really is at absolutely eye-watering levels. Well, this week also we saw continued speculation that the Chinese market will benefit from being allowed to enter the MSCI Emerging Markets basket. And we're going to get a decision on that about 2 weeks from now. But China certainly wants greater access for foreign investors to buy its market, and not least because that would allow them to diversify their risk. If you're going to engage in a massive reform program, and China is certainly engaged in that right now, where they don't want to be labeled as a middle-income country. They want to get out of the middle-income trap. They really do want to take their income, or their GDP per capita, up from about its current 8,000, and they want to double that. And they really do want to get into the advanced economies club. But in order to do that, then they're going to have to break the business model that got them to where they are already. And that's, well, you can't make an omelette without breaking some eggs, and there are definitely going to be some eggs broken. Now, if you were going to do that, the first thing that you would do is you would say, okay, well, if we're going to take this big risk, we'd like to diversify that risk. We'd like to insure ourselves against that risk. So then what has China done over the last few years? They've opened up their capital markets. They've opened up the Stock Connect with between Shenzhen and Hong Kong. And And they've been introducing reforms necessary to allow Chinese shares to be listed in the MSCI indices, which would really represent an impressive source of additional demand. And then they've also been liberalizing the financial sector and giving people more potential to invest there. So on the one hand, you can see that as a positive reform, but you can also see it as the Chinese ensuring themselves that if things do go not exactly according to plan, well, then they're not on the hook for the whole thing, that they've at least diversified their risk. And by and large, if you look at the stock market, it has pulled back and it has found support. And there was a clear upper dynamic on Wednesday. And really, a clear downward dynamic would be required really to question potential that we're going to see some additional upside from China. And the reforms that have been introduced in India over the last few years since Modi, and actually it was before Modi, in the last few weeks of the last parliament that reforms were introduced as well, that they're starting to gain traction. So the Indian market is growing at around 8% per annum. Now, the Indian market had been trending lower for much of last year and has broken that medium-term downtrend. So India is probably likely to be one of those markets that is likely to benefit, and not least because it isn't the easiest place to invest, and it has a large a domestic consumer economy. So it is, in at least in part, insulated from what happens elsewhere. And India is a country that benefits enormously from relatively low oil prices. And yes, oil prices have bounced and almost doubled off their lows, but they're still less than half of where their peak values were. And that really does look like a very positive factor for India. And when you look at those two major population centers, you can't help but think about the lack of governance and the lost generations that you're going to have in the Middle East as a result of the conflicts that are raging there. And it is also interesting, and I think really worth pointing out, that Venezuela represents a potential problem, because news items that we're getting just the last couple of days are talking about people not having enough food. And that's usually the tipping point, because if people don't have enough to eat, well, then all other loyalties go out the window, and people will do whatever it takes to really get the situation turned around. That's really exactly what happened at the very beginning of the Arab Spring. And then what happens in Venezuela is likely to have a ripple effect in the region, but also because it is a major oil producer, it could have an effect on the oil price. So then we have to continue to look at the oil price just in the short term as what has been a very consistent move, and a reaction of greater than between $6 and $7 would be required to question that. But if we look at oil beyond the short term and we start to look at things over the medium term, then the higher prices go, the greater the availability there is of additional supply and the greater the incentive there is to bring that supply online. And the USA is now a major swing producer in terms of its unconventional oil and gas. And prices haven't quite yet rallied enough to encourage some of that supply back into the market, but it really is only a matter of time. And then when you look at what is likely to happen with electric vehicles, where China has mandated that they're going to have 4 million electric vehicles on the road by 2020, and if they achieve that goal, and there's no reason to believe that they won't, then that would represent a 30% growth per annum between now and then. Tesla, having taken, I don't know, is it 300 or 400,000 orders for its Model 3, a car that nobody will have for at least a year, then that's also impressive. And that's with cars that don't yet come outside the realm of range anxiety. But what happens in 5 or 6 years when innovations have taken place that bring the range of electric vehicles up to about 500 miles or even 400 miles. I don't think there's anybody really wants to drive for 400 miles without taking some sort of break. And then that eliminates the range anxiety argument. And then because people obviously don't like paying for fuel or would like to pay considerably less for it, and because the price of those vehicles is down into a range that is highly competitive with conventional vehicles, well, why not own one? And then you get massive adoption rates for electric vehicles. Well, for every electric vehicle that people take, then that is not just a loss of revenue for gasoline or oil suppliers, but it's a removal of a source of demand. And generally speaking, that isn't something that we have seen in the energy sector ever. So then it's the introduction of renewables is an enormous just change, an absolute game changer in the energy sector. So yes, this is still a largely bullish environment short term for oil prices, but it could peak any day. And when it does, well, then that's when we're really going to find out where the low is for oil prices. And my contention all along has been that natural gas offers us perhaps the best template for what we can expect from oil prices, and that is that we get incredibly volatile ranging, and the range in natural gas is from about $1.50 up to over $4. So that's well in excess of 100% range. It's more like 150% range from bottom to top. We could quite easily get that in oil prices. And if that's the case, then if the low is at $27, we're really not we've already nearly had 100% rally. This is not the time to be getting progressively more bullish about the oil price. And of course, that's because we're basing it on technological innovation. And despite the fact that we have volatility and we have extraordinary monetary policy, it is worth considering that one of the reasons we have all of this extraordinary monetary policy is because the pace of technological innovation is accelerating, and technological innovation is deflationary. So deflationary forces are also accelerating. And when we start to think about the role that autonomous trucking could have, and I posted Musings from the Oil Patch, which is really a great report this month. It's by Alan Brooks for PPHB, and he devotes quite a bit of time talking to about autonomous vehicles with relation to trucking. And he makes some very good points, but the key point is that it would remove the necessity for second drivers, and amid an environment where you have an aging demographic of people who are actually truckers, that the capability of people doing the beginning of the journey and the end of the journey, but leaving the middle part of the journey to the computer so that they can rest up, is very compelling indeed. And the technology exists, and it has been tested in both Europe and the USA. So we're really only waiting for laws to catch up, and convoying also reduces the drag that these vehicles experience, so then fuel efficiency improves. So, and if of course fuel efficiency improves, then that's another argument for why oil prices don't need to be at $100 a barrel. So, then if oil prices are going to stay low for longer, then that represents an abundancy. Argument, but also it represents an environment where we could have the conditions for economic growth taking hold. And is it any wonder that economic growth has been so muted over the last decade when oil prices have been so high? And it's a statistic I've seen on many occasions, is that a $10 rally in oil prices represents a drag on the economy of 0.2% of GDP. So we had oil prices rallying from $10 to over $100. So you're shaving over 1%. And in some cases 2% of growth from the economy. So if we continue to get oil prices staying reasonably low, then that acts as a tailwind to the economy. And then the big questions are about exactly what are we going to do with all this debt, because negative interest rates are inherently deflationary. You simply can't ask people to put their money in the bank and give them back less. So then we could end up with any number of scenarios, but one of them is that we do get helicopter money, that that central banks decide that eventually that this negative interest rate environment isn't going to work, that they are not going to achieve growth by doing that. So then, or at least they're not going to achieve loan growth. They're not going to repair the balance sheets of the banks by doing that. So they have to try something else. And Switzerland is already talking about just mailing money to people. And then that's an additional reason why one really should be looking at gold, because you cannot simply mail gold. And and I guess the other and a related topic is that you can't simply create Bitcoin out of thin air either. And the reweighting of the reward for solving a Bitcoin equation is rapidly approaching. So Bitcoin prices also broke out this week, and not least because it's also used as a vehicle for Chinese to get some of their money out of the country and to avoid capital controls. So really there are a lot of exciting things happening, but and I know that the tone of this audio has been cautious, because that's how I feel cautious. But by and large, if we're still in a liquidity fueled rally, then that acts as a tailwind for asset prices, and we might well be entering the accelerating phase, in which case it would be most opportune to have to participate, and yet to express almost in a schizophrenic sense that it is time to be cautious and to limit one's risk by being adopting very tight money control discipline, but to participate nonetheless. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, and I wish all the best to all of you.